Amen. Well, welcome. If you just came in, we welcomed you once. We welcome you again. We'll welcome you as many times as you'll let us. But pretty excited, and we're a little more relaxed here at the 11 o'clock service than we were at 9:30. We told them at 9:30 we'd never done this before. Now we have. We just did it a while back. So, you know, we made some big mistakes, so we can fix all that for you guys right now. It went really well. These guys did great, and I'm going to introduce them to you, and we get to learn kind of what we can skip this one to get to some really awesome stuff. So the message today, we're expecting God to speak as we always do, but we're through lives, right? So we've been talking about what he just said. Is the gospel, we're a gospel-centered, forever-focused, multi-ethnic movement of God. The gospel, what is that? It's this news, this life-changing, I can't believe it, but it's true. This makes everything make sense in the world. News of our rescue and adoption. That we've been rescued and adopted. Is that strong enough to mean anything to our multi-ethnicity? Is that strong enough to unify people of all kinds of different whatever? And some of you kind of like, yeah, that sounds good, but like I don't know. I haven't seen that. Well, we're going to get to show you that just from a representation of our church. So these guys that are on the stage are here because they're relentless through and through. They have been a part of our church and shown their love and support and a lot of work and hours and sweat and all kinds of things. But also, they represent kind of a cross-section of our church, both culturally, ethnically, and age-wise and church background and all those things. So let me just introduce them. That'll save us some time instead of asking them to give their whole history background. But let me introduce who's up here. This is Vasti Rodriguez. Hopefully you know Vasti by her beautiful voice as she leads us and will lead us again at the end of this service in worship. I hope you were here 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. We were so excited to ask and get to hear Vasti's story as she shared coming to the United States at the age of 13, not knowing a word of English, not knowing anything about us, which she'll share a little bit her perspective on that this morning. Came from Dominican Republic and has been here, and a few of us got to go and celebrate her citizenship ceremony, which was the coolest thing ever. So we're thrilled to have Vasti, not just Vasti, but our first service. I think your mom was in the house. Did I see Melissa in the house? So thank you for being up here. Vasti, Chauncey Hatcher has been with us from day one. It's a pretty epic part of our story as a church. When the Hatcher family, which is Chauncey and his wife Linnea, and their kids, I say kids, like one of them, I don't even know if she qualifies. So they got four kids and one young lady. Okay, yeah. She's in college and back with us. So Aya and then Karis and Chauncey and Jaden and Jayla, the Hatcher family, they were the first, honestly, we didn't say this first service, but I don't mind saying it this way. They're the first non-white family before we even launched to say we're in on Relentless, which we'll talk about later, the power of being first. So that and more than that, to me, it's just become a dear brother in Christ and a dear friend. So Chauncey works in the public schools, as a lot of you do. We have an abnormal percentage of our church that works in Wake County public schools, which we know is not by accident. Chauncey is a middle school guidance counselor, and Vasti also works and teaches in a different Wake County middle schools. I'm not giving like the school names because I don't want people like tracking you down on websites and stuff. So that's Chauncey Hatcher. This is Michael Bowman. This is how relentless he is. When we in our early days, when we had less people in our church than are in this room, that Michael said, hey, we're going to grow this church one way or another. So he and Ashley produced our first Relentless baby, first baby born into this church. Thank you. Really, thank you, Ashley, not so much Michael.
Did the easy part.
This is what happens when you have a round table. You roll back. Oh, we on purpose did not script this. So there was a temptation by me to like, hey, what are you going to say here? And it's going to be different. So we got, you know, that's what we get. So, but Michael Bowman was, I should have looked between services because I guessed fourth or fifth person that we were able to baptize in our 33 that we baptized now at Relentless Church. And we got some baptisms coming in December. If you're thinking about that, we got a day for you. And Michael runs a great construction company called Grand Entrance. So if you're looking for some stuff to be built, he's your guy. And so thankful for Michael being willing to share in this deal today. Beside him is Evelyn Williams. Evelyn has something that probably nobody else in the room has, and that is a degree from every university in the state of North Carolina. That is an exaggeration, but slightly, right? So she has degrees from state, North Carolina, NC State, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Duke University. And she worked 27 years in the School of Social Work at North Carolina, did some pretty cool stuff. So she brings that perspective along with some other cool stuff family-wise that she's going to share with us today. And last but not least is Rafael Gonzalez. Rafael is our, they're either booing you or like giving you love. I don't know what that was, but Rafael is our newest staff member and moved his family here. A lot of them, I saw you telling them goodbye in the lobby of some people making the trip back, but I met Raf in Kentucky, but Raf is born and bred in Boston, Massachusetts. I should have mentioned too, because Chauncey's proud of his Chicagoness. So Chauncey, along with others, come from Chicago. Raf comes from Boston, Massachusetts. I met him in Kentucky, and his family, his history is in Puerto Rico. So is there a thing like Puerto Rico and Dominican, or is that a thing? Is that we like each other, right?
We're cool.
Okay. So we're making sure with all that. And see, we got our Brazilian contingent coming in. So. Man, we got a lot of seats at 9:30, just so you know, if you want to get up. No, you guys keep coming to 11. We'll make room for you. Thank you guys for scooting over. So we're going to start this official message thing and skip a few things so we can get to some really awesome stuff that we learned through First Service. So as a multi-ethnic church, I wanted to stop preaching this week and just figure out, hey, is anything happening? Because this is one of those series I can preach till Jesus comes back. But just preaching about race and gospel, last week we tied those together like they're not two different things. According to Scripture and Pastor Brian Laritz just referenced Paul and Peter, the gospel connects completely to how we view each other across all these lines. So instead of preaching another message, because we preached 4 weeks on this, and if you missed those, go back and watch them, get a real heart for who we are as a church. We wanted to see, like, what is that doing out here and hopefully out here? So let's just start there, panel, with kind of your own perspective. And you can talk about Relentless Church as a whole, or you can talk about this series specifically, and we'll get to all that. But just talk about, so give me the good, the bad, and the ugly. Don't be scared of some stuff that's hard. But the challenges, the impact, I'll tell you this instead of asking the question, it'll save us some time. All of us, multi-ethnic church is new for all of us except for Vasti. Vasti's the only one up here that has experience before Relentless with being a part of multi-ethnic church, right? So that's 90%+, and sometimes I think it's really high. Just so you know, so if you're here with us and you're like, man, I've heard this, I know this, you're part of that single digits, right? The mass majority of us, this is our first time with multi-ethnic church experience. So other than Vasti. So wherever you are on that, let's just start the discussion. We're going to try to do this like you're not there, so we're going to talk and interrupt and do whatever and look at each other and all that. So let's just start the conversation there with, man, Relentless Church, multi-ethnic, how has that impacted you specifically, personally? Anybody?
All right, I'll go.
Thank you.
No problem, man. It's Relentless has been different. I think for me, it's been the first time where you really are at a church that's intentional about living out the fullness of the gospel as it relates to being multi-ethnic. I think for me, as a black man, going to different churches, I've been to churches, both black and white, where, you know, you walk in, and I love it, as Vashti said in the first service, but you walk in and I am there, but they're not really accounting for me, for my experiences, for my background. They're not accounting for what are my thoughts and my perceptions on things. I am simply present, but we're not intimate. We're not getting to know each other, and they're not intentional about getting to know or bringing me into the full fold of the gospel. So Relentless.
Time out. All right, so here's what we're gonna do this service, okay, because I don't want you guys to be comfortable. All right, so we're not gonna repeat. So when you say something like, so let's push back on that. Not push back, let's just push back. Dig, right? So some would say, hey, why do we need to account for you? Like, it's Jesus. We're all humans. The gospel is about our sinful condition. We all are in the same boat because we sin. So why would we need to account? Like, what does that even mean? Account for, however how you said it, account for your, what are you talking about?
Well, what I mean by that, and you guys feel free to jump in here, but.
Oh, let's, no, forget them, Chauncey. Let's go me and you, man.
I got your back.
One-on-one conversation at the table. I like it. what I mean account for is acknowledging that my story is not your story, that my thoughts are not your thoughts, my experiences are very different from yours under the umbrella of the gospel. And that when you look at the gospel, when you read the Bible, what made Jesus so incredible to me is that when he went to different places and interacted with different people, he met them in their experiences, in their mind frame. He didn't tell them, come straight to me and do it how I do it, regardless of what your background was. He went to the woman at the well and said, I know about your husband, but here's a place where I can change you. He went to Zechariah in the tree and said, come on down, I want to have dinner at your house. And he knew the social and the gospel impact that would have. He didn't just say, I'm going to address one without the other. And that, for me, is why Relentless is different for me and for my families, that we're addressing the gospel first, but we're not leaving behind anybody's uniqueness. And we're asking them to bring that instead of telling them to hold that at the door.
He didn't go with that.
He didn't need any help.
He didn't need no curve. I'm trying to throw him a curve. And like, he just,
I just wanted to add to that. As Chauncey's sharing that, I think the visual of us here sitting at the table is powerful, because what he's saying is the difference is you have a seat at the table, right? As opposed to saying anybody's welcome, you can come and you can sit out there and hopefully you get something, or if you don't, it's fine, but it's going to be comfortable for us. Like, being intentional about starting creating a multi-ethnic church and living the way Jesus did is to say, hey, come sit at the table. Right. I'm invested in you. You are not just welcome here, but man, we're family, and I want to know your story.
So with that, and we'll come back to the original question, but it's second service. I had got Dr. Pepper's in me. I'm not preaching. So, like, if we know 90% of our church has never been a part of multi-ethnic church. In fact, if I dug down deep, I think it's closer to like 97%, honestly. Like, why? Like, how? Like, a lot of people in this room love Jesus, and a lot of people in this room have never had like a horrible thought based on race. And they're like, how do you explain like, this is 2,000 years old as far as a movement. We've proven that. If you haven't been, like, go. Like, it's in there. It's not a little side part of the, it is God's plan from Genesis to Revelation. And yet here we are in 2017, and good people in here, man, there's some good people in here, but yet 90% of us, this is our first experience with multi-ethnic church in America.
Yeah.
How is that true? Not in the list of questions.
No, it wasn't. I think comfort level. I think you've got to be willing to get uncomfortable. Or I should say, it's uncomfortable to be a multi-ethnic church in certain instances. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, just for background perspective, I'm coming from a church context where when things happened in our country, like, Trayvon Martin's or so on, so all those things that are happening far too often, unfortunately, I was at a church where we didn't even talk about that on a Sunday morning. And nobody said boo about it. And so because it's frankly much easier not to address it, right? But to say, hey, we're going to be a multi-ethnic church where your story matters and we want your perspective and you have a seat at the table, that means you got to wade into those difficult discussions and be willing to let Jesus work that tension out so that we could all become better for it.
Yeah, let me speak to that, and then I want to hear from you three that haven't spoken. Because we have stopped what we planned to talk about and completely changed Sunday and the message in our three-year history. I think, I know two times, maybe three, based on different, now we'll speak to whatever, but I'm talking about changed everything. We got to come together. We got to talk about what's going on. And we had to do that because, one, we wanted to, because we're a multi-ethnic church. And as a multi-ethnic church, now it's not those people's issues, right? It's our issue, which is so, like, family of God things. But There are folks, I'm sure, that was like, man, I wish you wouldn't have done that. And then there's probably other folks that wish we would have changed it on some Sundays that we didn't and changed everything. So and I got people around me. I'm not by myself. But I got to, like, seek the Lord on that, just so you know kind of the background. And it was pretty, like, in those instances, the week in Dallas, July of 16, and, all that was going on and people dying and then police officers being shot in Dallas is what I was referencing. Like, we knew that was a week we want to stop whatever message series we were in and speak to what God is saying to us and what we need to do as a church. So we'll continue to do that. Unfortunately, there will be other events in our country and in the world that we'll need to stop and address. Sometimes we address those in different ways than from Sunday morning, but I just wanted you to know kind of how we decide when to do that. It's by talking to people and seeking the Lord. Mm-hmm. But Michael, Evelyn, Vasty, go ahead, Michael. What you got about? What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about the Packers? You want to talk about Aaron Rodgers?
Let's not talk about
that. Okay, then let's talk about multi-ethnic church and what's that meant to you and how that's affected you.
All right. It's affected me in a lot of ways. It's changed a lot of my views. Going back, I guess, it's hard to start at a certain spot, right? So grew up in the Catholic Church. It was very, you got to do this, the right time, right place. You got to be this old to do, communion, blah, blah, blah. And being the bad kid and get kicked out. And then having, my best friend was black growing up and being a part of his family and going to black church where it's really different and, being the only white kid, can be have its funny times and hard times, right? So, and then growing up, as life does, you kind of change and, life takes you separate ways. I had a friend or a mentor when I started working that, had a racist heart, and power of proximity, you fall into those same thought processes and, he wasn't the white hood cross burning, racist, but just not giving people, the chance just based on skin color, or, perceptions that, you may have. So, naturally my thought process went that way and, became very defensive about my skin color, saying, I'm proud of being white or whatever it is. I think through multi-ethnic church though, power of proximity. Chauncey's a good friend. Ernest, many people in here are good friends of mine that I care about. So, speaking on the times is when, you have conversations that you can't really be defensive because these people are hurting, there's several, making phone calls just because I'm defensive and I want to be like, well, hold on, why is this happening when, this is happening, and being able to call, you and Chauncey and say, hey, this is how I feel, and then getting another side of the story, and then a big thing is your kids being different skin color and you saying to me that you worry about the day that something may happen to one kid and not the other is very hard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Evelyn, as far as your interaction with multi-ethnic church and how that's hit you and affected you. So
I've been to churches that were integrated, and the church did as whatever it did, and the people that sat there may have been different skin colors. I didn't really know about what multi-ethnic meant when Brenda and Randy first invited me to come to Relentless. I thought it was going to be another kind of experience with an integrated church. And it was actually something quite different. And I couldn't really put my finger on what was different, but it felt different coming here. I've since learned that I came with a lot of pride. I felt like I was a very open-minded and very tolerant person. And what I've learned since I have been here is to be humble. And I've learned humility and to open my heart to people who are different, not in a prideful way, but in a way that really seeks to understand and to be open to a different kind of something different than tolerance, but really coming to know and understand.
Yeah, that's great, especially connected to to the story we'll get you to tell in a minute. But yeah, Vasti, as far as you and again, you being having more experience than most with multi-ethnic church, maybe from the worship leading angle, like talk to like what Relentless has meant, how it's affected you.
I think first through this series, it has just taught me about proximity and having relationships intentionally with other people, but also just giving me that opportunity, again, to lead worship in at a church where you have diversity and where I can also feel part of it as a Hispanic. And I shared this earlier, so our first reaction when we moved to the United States and we visited churches, we noticed the difference between like white churches and then black churches, and then there's a Hispanic church. You know, the Hispanic church you can understand because of the language barrier, but we couldn't understand why was there a difference between black church here and then a white church there. Why are they not together? They speak the same language. So, of course, based on the history, learning about it, we understood where everything just was coming from. But then really, it became personal when I attended a church. And it was mostly predominantly one ethnicity. And this family, they wanted us to feel welcome in there. And so we went very excited. But I remember being at this service and feeling just not, like I couldn't belong there, not feeling welcome. Like I had to do certain things, like I had to be part of like a certain society or group to meet their standards in order to be there. And I remember just thinking, wow, I hope I can attend a church or be part of a church where everyone feels welcome and they never feel the way I'm feeling right now, mm-hmm. based on maybe their color of their skin or where they're coming from. So I think being, intentionally, my family also, we were looking for a church where we felt part of it, welcome, but also other people who maybe don't look like us feel welcome and part of it too. So,
yeah. Excellent. Let's go then to like real stuff. So when I think it might be easy to be out there and kind of hear us saying all this, you know, great stuff and maybe make the assumption that we're all on the same page about everything, which we're clearly not, right? If we had more time, my man Chuck's in this service and we've been kicked out of my own house. My wife has kicked us out of my own house and like, go argue. I was like, we're not arguing. We're just talking passionately. So we're not going to do that today. But what do you do? What does somebody here do as they're getting in these relationships or whatever? Maybe it's a post on social media. Maybe it's a comment. That is hurtful, that is like, or disagree, like, because the goal isn't, well, for us to like see that the same way or politically, you know, agree necessarily on whatever. What would you suggest, or maybe you got a, like a real life Relentless example where, man, I'm not on the same page with this person, or I've been hurt, or I'm just confused, or I'm whatever. What do you do when that happens? What have you done? What would you suggest we do? Anybody?
Yeah, man, I can speak to that, and it's funny because I'm sitting next to this guy, and and I remember the first time the multi-ethnic church hit home for me is we were having a discussion early in the political season, and I was, I don't mind saying that because I'm not the pastor, but I was very anti-Trump at the time, and I couldn't understand. To me, I had this really one-sided view of who Trump
was. I'm not pro-Trump, by the way.
He's not. He was not. He was not.
The word Trump was not uttered in first service. Just so you know.
It was not.
We're there. Let's go.
But since we said it.
I didn't say it. You said it.
I said it. I'm not. Yeah. But as I was making this great case, Mike spoke to me from a different side. And he wasn't pro-Trump. I'm not saying that. I'm not. But it caused me to stop and think, man, have I even considered other options or other reasons why something may happen? And it doesn't mean that it wasn't a debate about, hey, choose my side or choose your side, but it simply hit home about when you ask, you have these things that come up, have I considered other reasons? Have I considered somebody else's positioning, have I talked to them enough to be able to tell somebody else what they think? Or is everything I'm saying simply what I think they think? Mm-hmm. And that's powerful for me.
So why? Because the whole culture is like, that's what you're not supposed to do, right?
Right.
You're supposed to tell people what they think, mm-hmm. label them from whatever angle, whatever side. So
and then argue with them about why they think that way.
Right. And it's actually easier and maybe more fun. Why would you take that? Like, what would be the motive to take that route? You know what I'm saying? Like, why even? Like, most of the time we never get to this point because right. now you guys have a friendship. We can come up here
Absolutely.
And do this, but we never get past that first step of hearing, like, why? What's the motive for somebody?
Well, I think the motive would be, number one, if you're going to call yourself friends, then these are conversations that shouldn't be hard to have. Otherwise, you just know each other, and you know each other's name, and lots of people know other people's names. But if I'm going to call Mike a friend, if I'm going to really want to invest in Mike and his daughter and his wife, then I've got to be able to ask him questions so that I can get a different perspective so that I am growing. Again, as we talked about earlier, not just socially, but am I growing? Am I true walking out of the gospel? Am I loving my neighbor as myself? Because I love myself enough to think through what I'm feeling. Do I love Mike? Do I love Raph? Do I love Angela or anybody else? Do I love them enough to know what they're feeling? And even if I don't initially agree, do I love them enough to say, well, if it's important to them, it's important to me?
That's powerful. Talk about what you mentioned, First Service, Michael, about like how things have changed as far as the discussions you're having now versus back in the day.
Yeah, you know, like you said, if you love people and the people you go to church with, one big person to me is a guy that works for me. He's like my right hand man, older black dude. Love this guy to death, man. Yeah, I mean, if we were brother, you know, I feel that we share blood. I love him so much. So, you know, I've noticed with him that he loved me the same way. So he would, you know, not conform his thoughts, but he would say the stuff to, you know, I guess not be confrontational. And until whatever specific case of all the recent events, you know, I was like, you know, this isn't right, man. I don't feel right about this. The things that are going on are not right. And I see that. And then, you know, that opened up some context, you know, that he was feeling ways that he wasn't, you know, he just didn't want to come off any type of way, I guess, confrontationally. But, you know, through those times, you start having conversations and you start, you know, when I love these people the way I love them, like, and you're hurting, I feel for you. So, you know, now my thought process is, I mean, complete 180 from how I used to think. And, you know, having conversations with people that our thought processes were similar or close or still feeling defensive about, you know, I guess pro-white or pro-black, you know, whatever that case is, right? So, you know, now I'm having arguments against people that I'm like, what you're thinking and the way you're thinking and the stuff you're saying is wrong, you know, and mm-hmm. it helps me because I had their same arguments, so I can use them against them now.
So. Yeah. So part of this series is, like, multi-ethnic. It's not multi-ethnic series. It's multi-ethnic church. It's really not multi-ethnic church. It's a multi-ethnic life, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a lifestyle. And again, it's not. I wanted people to hear. It's not. We would still see things six different ways, right? Mm-hmm. Different perspectives. It's that the love between us that comes from Jesus mm-hmm. is bigger than that, right? So, but now you start to seek out what God intended to be. So Raph, politely. Tell the story politely and briefly. That's two awful words that I don't want somebody telling me, but you can preach next week. Like I remember first, before we ever knew this was happening, right, as far as you coming to Relentless, you were getting some, what we call in church world, we'll talk pastor talk, some big time offers from some big time churches, churches that would not say what we said, which is, hey, we need to raise some of your salary and all that. So talk about like that process for you and how that, you know, plugs into multi-ethnic.
Yeah. I knew there was a seed had been planted in me that I want to be a part of multi-ethnic. First time I ever heard of that term actually was, as I think about it now, sitting in your living room when you made the pitch that, hey, we're moving to North Carolina to plant a church and this is what it's going to be like. And from that moment, something resonated in my soul. Like, it just felt right. And I didn't even know why. And then, you know, investigated and learned more about it and was like, yeah, that's who I want to be. But I didn't know necessarily how God was going to work that out because I was in a church with the job at that point. But as I knew God was going to be moving us, my wife and I, along, and still not knowing where, like Pastor David said, some offers started coming in. And the first thing I did was go on their website and check these churches out. And one church in particular was a big church. They had 40 people on staff, paid staff. And I'm looking at the entire staff, and it was everybody looked the same. It was that ruled them out for me. I don't want to say that's the only reason I picked it. You know, they had some really attractive things about them, but I saw that and I felt like this isn't me. This isn't, God's calling me to something else. And that's got to be reflected in the diversity of the leadership in the church as well as the congregation. So,
yeah. That's beautiful. And I'm excited for you guys to hear from Raph next week, partly because this is so many of your stories. You think I'm going to talk about you, but this is so many of your stories. And I don't know how much you're going to speak to this, but now you pretty much have to speak to it some next week. But Raph and his spouse do not see political issues the same. All right. So if that's anybody else and not like they're, you know, they just wait. You got to talk about that next week, all right? So if that's you, like, be ready for that. Evelyn, talk about, like, your story, specifically your dad's story. It's just so powerful to me as we get perspectives from what different ones of us grew up different places. So tell us about your dad.
So among other things, I guess I represent the age diversity.
I wasn't saying that. I was thinking about myself. But we'll do that together, me and you.
Okay.
Chauncey's a few days younger than me.
So I grew up as an Army brat. My dad did 20 years in the Army and retired. We were in Fort Carson then, so we were in Colorado, and moved to Virginia. My brother and I were 8 and 11, something like that, and pretty scared about moving to Virginia because all we saw was what was on the news. And it was pretty scary about what was going to happen when we moved to the small town that my mother said was going to be just wonderful. When we got there, we were the only kids that had ever moved to that town in the history of the world, and it was not wonderful. My dad couldn't find work, and he was not formally educated, but he had learned a lot of skills in the Army. And he eventually was offered a job with the Suffolk Police Department, which was very small department. There had never been a uniformed black officer in that department. And he was offered that job, you know, breaking a major racial barrier, but the terms were that he was offered were that he could only give tickets and enforce the law with other black citizens of the town, but could not give tickets to any white citizens of the town. That's all there was that we knew about at that time. And he said no, that he wouldn't do that, that if he was going to be a police officer, he wanted all the responsibilities and privileges that any other officer of his rank would have. So that was kind of the story that we knew. When he began working, it was a very frightening time in our family. My brother and I weren't allowed to answer the telephone because there were threatening phone calls, and our parents didn't want to expose us to that. They didn't explain to us a lot of what was happening. We just knew that we were supposed to be scared, and we were. We were strictly supervised when we went out of the house. People rallied around, but we didn't really know why. We heard whisperings that there might be a cross burning in our yard and what we were supposed to do if that happened. So years later, I was going through a box of photographs and came across a photograph that I asked my mom about. And it was a photograph of my dad giving a ticket. And she told me, and there are holes in this story. I wish I had filled in the holes, but it's too late now. Anyway, she told me that when my father gave his first ticket to a white person, that another officer was on hand to keep the peace in case there was rioting. there must have been a photographer on hand. This picture actually was in the local newspaper at the time it happened. So I don't know if this was a staged event or how this came about. I didn't ask those questions. But this is my dad giving a ticket to a white truck driver, and the officer across the street is looking on in case there's a riot that he needs to quell. And that's the way it was in the 1960s in small town, in a small town in Virginia. And the cross burning didn't happen. We were all safe. My dad went on to spend 10 or so years with the police department. He died while he still worked there, and they retired his badge. And if you can read this writing, at the very end it says that when I went back, when my mother was very ill and spent some time in that town, it turned out in the early 2000s that the chief of police in that department is black now. And so in 40 years, things can really change. My dad was a pioneer. He was a man of integrity, of dignity, and he would not let himself be treated in an undignified way.
Wow. Yeah, it's the power of being first. And thanks for sharing that, Evelyn. So let me follow up with that better than I did first service even with, and maybe Chauncey, you want to speak to this too. I don't know, but like from my perspective, which is mine, if that was my dad, right? So part of it I want some of our young people to hear, like we're not talking about 1800 stuff, right? But if that was my dad, there would be a part of me, I think, that still today would probably just prefer to not be in a multi-ethnic church. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
With that, because, you know, so speak, either of you speak to, because I know some of your story and as far as that, Chauncey. So why has that not led to bitterness and separation and voluntary segregation in your specific life, Evelyn?
I've been there too.
Yeah,
I've been in that place too. You know, if I think about what my father would say to me, he would tell me that that was really stupid and short-sighted. And he was a very wise man, not educated, formally educated, as I said, but very wise. He would have said, you know, the world changes, and that I needed to rise above that and open myself up to new experiences, to other experiences.
Yeah, I think for me, and even relating that right back to Relentless, for me, a big part of getting to the place where I can walk past some of those past hurts and pains is, are the people that I'm walking with living out what we're talking about? And and so, you know, I don't know that I've said this to you personally a lot, but seeing you live out the mission of Relentless makes the gospel the first thing that I think of when I come into this place. And so I know there's truth, I know there's honesty, I know there is an intentionality, and I think that is what helps you move past some of the hurts and pains that you may have experienced in the past and recognize that those were individual sin-based hurts and pains. And how dare I hold somebody else to a lifetime accountability of sin as if I don't do it myself every day? And so if there's grace for them, if there's grace for me, there has to be grace for them. And that's what allows me to come in here.
That's strong. So with that, like Michael, even feedback between services, Michael, you shared same thing in first service that, you know, part of your history and your story is racist heart, which just takes incredibly, you know, courage to stand, you know, sit here and say that here. But then as the white guy at the table, right? So in between services, somebody say, make sure you don't let white people all feel like we're saying they all have, like that's your story, right? So you don't speak for anybody but you, but what would you say to somebody who may be here today, whatever their color, that may be in that narrow place that you were in however many years ago?
That's hard. I mean, you know, it was a very slow process. So, you know, a lot of things have just kept digging in. You know, I think you spoke on interracial dating, you know, and I noticed with myself that was like one of the last things that it was just really hard for me to get over, you know, and keep moving on. And it's just, it's having a friend and feeling and hearing from them. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of people that are black and Hispanic. So it's like, it's always just being able to ask a question, right, without having some kind of preconceived notion of what the answer is. Ask the question humbly and then listen. I mean, wow. You know, they say the 2 ears, 1 mouth. Listen, yeah. And then I'm an arguer, so, you know, I want to kind of poke and prod a little bit and try to get some kind of rise, but, you know, I'm still open to hear.
Yeah.
So,
Can I address that too? I think the best way to really walk through that is in small group. Because I think from stage, we hear people have conversations, we hear people talk, but those are so individualized and they can apply them broadly. But when you get into small group, that's when you can have those arguments that last longer than the 5 minutes between services, or I can really get to know Evelyn's story, or I can talk to Raph and Vashti about what's really on their hearts or how life is impacting them. But outside a small group, it's so incremental, the time that we spend with each other. You just can't get the depth that you need to really take the path that Mike's talking about, or all of us are talking about.
Yeah, yeah, I'm so glad you said that. And that's the story of our church. Like, we're limited on Sunday morning, but through small groups, through load in, mm-hmm. Load in, load out, so a lot of us got to know each other in the early days, and we'll do that here in a few minutes. But I think what this is today, church, is like, just one, make sure you know I'm not lying to you. Like, this stuff's happening, and it's just as simple as, it's not easy, but it's just as simple as humbling yourself, asking questions, and building relationships. Mm-hmm. Wanting to know Evelyn's background, wanting to know Vasti's perspective that I can't know unless I can't read that. I can't get that from a website. I got to get that human to human. And the motive for wanting to know is the gospel and the family of God. So one of the things that God called his church to do, and there's this thing, I don't know if you've heard of virtual church, you know, where, hey, some people think, you know, 20 years from now, we'll all do church in our homes on computer, which I don't buy that for a lot of reasons, because we're made to know each other. But also one of the things that God calls us to do, that he enjoys, whether you do or not, he enjoys us singing together, collectively, not because we sound great. Some of us do. This was like as close as I've ever been to leading worship, what's about to happen. Make sure my mic's off, please. But it's something about God saying, hey, my people come together. Part of this unity that we can't pull off, like, we're not good enough. I'm not good enough to pull off becoming family. We can tolerate and we can be integrated, but we can't be family on our own power. But something, even with the spirit and power of God, something in this moment right now, November 26th, God works in that, right? You may have come by yourself or be sitting by somebody, whoever, but God in the room does something to unite us across the room, across everything through worship. I can't explain it. I just believe it. So we thought it would be appropriate just to come to him together. And the words of this song are straight from the Lord's Prayer, that our Father in heaven, your name is holy, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We're not waiting for heaven to be multi-ethnic as we get scenes from heaven showing that they're multi-ethnic. No, we're bringing heaven to earth. That was what Jesus taught us to pray. So we're going to pray that in the version of a song. So just let God, wherever you are with God, wherever you brought into the room today, just focus on the lyrics to this song.